are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast. Before the season started, I pretty much was just shitting on him over and over and over and over and over again.
Which he did not appreciate, by the way.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
No, he didn't. He called me up. He's like, listen, you fucking douchebag, stop shitting on me on your podcast. Don't think I don't know that you and your 10 listeners.
When did we get 10? I thought we had like 6.
Dirty rapey beards give you extra points.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Don't forget that Charlie Blackman has a dirty rapey beard still.
Yes, it does, which gives him points.
Yeah, you subtract points.
No, come on. As a man who, has a dirty, rapey beard.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 161 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Matt Thompson and Mike Warner. Matt, how you doing?
Hasn't been the best day for best couple of days for baseball, but we're all hanging in there. I think we're all Marlins fans, so
that we are. We're recording Monday night. The Marlins, I think, are probably in like the sixth inning at this point of their first game back. We'll talk a little bit about that here in a few minutes, and hope to not cry live on the podcast.
Yeah, no promises about that.
Yeah, definitely. Mike Warner is with us as well. Mike, how are you?
Yeah, I'm, the same. I'm just kind of down the dumps. It's been this way since early yesterday morning. We're recording on Monday night, so early Sunday morning. It's just been a very... I'm not a very emotional person, but if you, just have watched Jose Fernandez... there's no way that you can just not be inspired by him. I mean, I'm tearing up just talking about it. It's just such a hard thing to think about and to talk about. It just sucks.
Yeah, I am an emotional person. I make no bones about that. I have no problem being open about how I feel and when something stings. I think this is the first time that I can think of where I legitimately cried because of a baseball game. And for those, at this point, the podcast comes out either Tuesday, late evening or early Wednesday morning. By the time everybody's hearing this, you'll have watched what happened in the Marlins game. You'll know or seen the highlights. You'll know exactly what we're talking about. It's still fresh for us because, like I said, we're recording this Monday evening. The game is still going on. It was a pretty amazing tribute that they did. The eight men around the mound without the pitcher for the national anthem and take me out to the ball game. Them all writing the number 16 into the pitcher's mound with their fingers. And then, D. Gordon... who was just so distraught on Sunday, and there was video and pictures of him just standing looking at the pitcher's mound in an empty stadium. For him to come up, take one pitch from the left-hand side, and then move over and hit a moonshot of a home run for his first one of
incredible.
The year, since he's come back from the suspension. And watching him just cry as he rounded the bases, cry as he entered the dugout and have to just be pretty much helped into the clubhouse. Baseball is a game of poignant moments. It's unlike any other sport, any other game that we watch, that we play, because it's these amazing moments that are put together over the course of your lifetime. And this is one of those amazing moments I personally will never forget.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, man. Watching D. Gordon go to the right-handed batter's box with Jose Fernandez's helmet on it and take that pitch was raw as it gets for me. That was an incredible moment. And then to do what he did with the first swing, hit probably as far as a home run that D. Gordon's probably ever hit in his life. You have to believe there was something a little extra behind that one for sure, and it was a moment that you can't get in any other sport, and it was phenomenal. The Fernandez thing has been tough for me. It brought me back to the Tavares thing for me, being a Cardinal fan and being a big prospect guy, and it brought me back to that. And that was an emotional thing for me too. I mean, so much unfulfilled promise. But this is different because it's unfulfilled promise with still, despite being a straight badass at everything, at life. It's incredibly tough. It's a huge loss for the game. It'll recover. I don't know when, but it's been tough.
I think it is a huge loss for the game. It's a huge loss for baseball. I think it's a huge loss for just the world in general. I mean, we lost an amazing person on top of a fantastic baseball player. And the world is a little bit sadder without Jose Fernandez in it. I mean, if you haven't heard his life story, which I'm assuming at this point you probably have. I mean, it's a truly amazing story. Go out there and read one of the millions of articles that people have written about him over the course of the last 24 hours. And you'll see just how much this kid overcame. And in spite of just a hard life, he just played the game and lived life to his fullest and did everything with a smile. He made baseball fun again. I can't remember who wrote it on Twitter in an article, but someone wrote, like, he took Make Baseball Fun Again, and he made that real.
Yeah.
For a lot of people, including myself. I mean, I'm not a Marlins fan. I've never owned Jose Fernandez on a team. You know, I never had any shares this year and previous years. But man, anytime he pitched, I watched. And I can't say that about a lot of players.
Go ahead. The thing is, you know, there's been deaths in professional sports and stuff, but this is the first time for me, at least, where it has caused such a wide array of just, you know, emotional gathering. You know, so many people just, they know who Jose Fernandez is, not just because he plays baseball, but because of the person he is. You know, you mentioned his life story, Justin. You know, something I posted on Twitter, which was a quote that he always liked to use was, "You were born into freedom. I had to earn mine." And, you know, us as American citizens, we are free every single day that we live. You know, he, like he said, had to earn his, you know, he tried three times to get to America and, you know, bring his family. And he was not able to do so. Finally, you know, he ended up saving his mother's life. This is all goes into his backstory, but he is a pillar, an idol to the Cuban, you know, to all the Cuban people on, you know, how to live an American dream, how to strive for your dream, you know. His first start, you know, ever in Major League Baseball, you know, he was facing David Wright. And I remember he, you know, people were asking him, you know, "This is your first professional start. You know, how do you feel?" And, you know, he essentially said, it took me everything to get here. It doesn't faze me one bit that I'm facing David Wright. That this is just a game. You know, life is much bigger than this. He's just such an inspiration. I Jose Fernandez, you know, the first time that I ever watched him was actually in spring training of 2013. And the first batter he faced was, you know, Giancarlo Stanton. And, you know, he ended up hitting him with a fastball and Stanton just kind of looked at him and, you know, immediately, you know, just it was kind of smiled at him. But Jose Fernandez smiled back. And that's the type of guy he is. You know, I mean, he is just such a fun. You could just see, you know, that he just conveys such a fun, loving spirit. His wife is pregnant. You know, I just, you know, my prayers, my thoughts, everything just, you know, everything goes to his family and, you know, just his legacy will always live on. Jose Fernandez is one of the best, not just baseball players, human beings I've ever been able to witness. And it's just, this is just the biggest tragedy I've been a part of for professional sports.
I agree. And I think part of what my, I guess, struggle with this is too, like, I kind of took him for granted. He's so young, and
we thought he'd be around forever.
Yeah, it's like I wish I would have watched him more.
It's surreal. Like, you, I still, I, it's not that I don't believe it. It's just so surreal. You know, life is so precious every single second, every single day.
Damn right, I mean, about that.
It just, you don't realize it until something like this happens, or, you know, just it's so humbling, you know, to see something like this happen. It's there's no words. You know, I think the Miami Marlins, when they did their press conference, kind of explained it best. You know, there are no words in terms of the emotions, in terms of reacting to something like this. It's something that you just have to try and go through, you know, and his family, you know, that's the thing that hurts the most, is his family, because you know how big of a family guy he is. And, you know, his mother, his grandmother in particular, just what they're going through right now. And nobody should have to be, you know, buried at 23 years old, let alone by their parents. And, you know, what's going through them. I mean, there's no words.
Yeah. It's truly sad. I struggled with it a lot yesterday. I was at work when I heard the news. It was, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning or something, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning on the West Coast, when the news kind of broke, over the internet. And, it was hard. I had 3 hours of a shift. I had to kind of sit there. I just sat there and I thought, and I had to write something for FanGraphs Monday morning, do the daily notes. And I felt remiss if I didn't mention it, but it was something that I had a hard time putting into words, because he was so young, and we never expected something like this. I would have made 750 guesses before if you told me, you know, someone in Major League Baseball was going to die at the end of the season, before I ever got to Jose Fernandez. It's a true loss for the game. It's a true loss for the people of Miami, the people of Florida, the Cuban population down there, and then just like I said before, for us as Americans, you know, he came to this country and lived the American dream. You know,
yeah, just received citizenship. Finally, you know, became a legal U.S. citizen within the last year and a half or so. You know, which is obviously a big moment. And you mentioned too, you know, not only is this a loss for baseball, but in Miami and in Cuba, but just the community in Miami. You know, he was involved in so many things in the community. You know, it's there's just no words.
Mm-hmm. There isn't. I mean, I think one of the coolest things, you know, you go to Fernandez's FanGraphs page and you look up and you see that future value number, and you see 80, like that symbolizes him perfectly, like off the field, on the field, in life, everything. And I hope it stays up there.
Yeah, I hope it does too. And, you know, before we move on, you know, we start talking about some things that are a little bit on the lighter side.
Less important.
Yeah, much less important, you know. And, you know, we at Friends of Fantasy Benefits always, we talk about these things when they happen, because we remember that these guys aren't just numbers, that these guys are real people too, and that these guys mean something to us as baseball fans, as fans of individual players, as fantasy baseball fans. These guys mean more than just numbers to us, to their teams, to the world. We felt like we had to talk about this, even though it's pretty fresh for us, you know. And so the last thing I want to mention is kudos to the Marlins organization for everything they did in terms of, you know, making sure the game was canceled on Sunday, taking care of the players, you know, putting together a really nice ceremony for him for the beginning of today's game, and retiring his jersey number.
Absolutely.
And having everybody wear it tonight for the final time anybody will wear the number 16, another 16 in a Marlins uniform. I thought it was a really classy move by the organization. So
yeah, I'm looking forward to the All-Star game next year. It's in Miami.
That's right.
Gotta expect big things there. I mean,
yeah,
it would have been his show, and I think it still will be. But.
And look, you know what? Matt mentioned to me before we started recording that the Marlins still have an outside chance of making the playoffs as a wild card team. I know I'm a Giants fan. I know Matt is a Cardinals fan. We both want our team to win a World Series every year, but I wouldn't be hurt one bit if the Marlins made the playoffs.
No, not at all. I mean,
yeah, and just game update, you know, we mentioned the D. Gordon home run, which is already just a miracle in itself. It makes you, you know, really think that there's something, you know, other than in this reality going on. But Justin Bour is also a candidate for a cycle tonight.
Yeah,
which would just,
he hit,
I mean,
a triple. It was amazing.
Yeah,
absolutely,
you never,
amazing.
It's like
never
that movie thing. He lifted it up triple. And carried to third base.
Oh, dude, yeah. If you guys haven't seen it, go back. Go find it. He does a belly flop into third base. The pitch before, he hit a monster. I mean, the ball like went like about 500 feet, just foul of a home run.
Yeah, I hope it happens, because if he hit, I mean, it has nothing to do with the stats. I want this to be, you know, not only a night where, you know, everybody kind of reflects on how Jose Fernandez impacted their life, but I just want this to be a night where it's just, you know, kind of magic for the Marlins, and they can all just kind of, you know, celebrate just and rejoice in the way that Fernandez affected them, you know.
For sure. All right. With that, let's transition out of something that is very serious, very sad, and kind of near and dear to our hearts, move into something a little bit more lighthearted. And let's talk about some just a few players that have, you know, either been pretty hot or pretty cold as of late. And then I want to talk more about the mock draft that we've got going on, especially because we didn't have Matt on last week. So I want to get his input on some of kind of the more interesting picks that we've had so far. But first, let's talk about Freddie Freeman, who has been hot once again and is actually just killed this season without really a lot of talk going around it. I mean, he's got 32 home runs. He's probably going to have over 100 runs scored, 87 RBI, 6 stolen bases, with a 305, 402, 570 triple slash. Mike, what are your thoughts on Freddie Freeman for next season?
Yeah, I was certainly wrong on Freeman coming into this year. He was one of my candidates at first base to, you know, kind of slump for this year. He was the number 10 overall guy going in drafts, about pick 90, and he certainly has outweighed that price. Right now, he's the number 5 first baseman on the ESPN Player Rater, and that's also including Daniel Murphy up, you know, at second, which, you know, his main position is second base. But, you know, pretty much I'm really excited. I've turned around full bore on Freddie Freeman overall. I mean, he has done everything to inspire confidence this season. He has struck out a bit more, but other than that, his hard contact is up. His expected batting average is, you know, definitely above average compared to other first basemen. He's hitting 305, which is, you know, second in his career. But regardless, the underlying metrics show that the batting average isn't a fluke. He's hitting less ground balls, generating it into more fly balls. His home run to fly ball rate is up, but it's not so far up that you, you know, can't bank on a repeat performance. No, I don't think he's a consistent 30 home run guy, but I think 25 plus, you know, each and every year, at least for the foreseeable future, is something that's definitely doable. Only 26 years old. There's a lot to like with Freddie Freeman, and I think that the Braves are going to kind of surround him with a little bit more talent here in the upcoming years. So in Keeper and Dynasty, you can feel really good about him. Going into drafts next season, I think that he should still be taken as a top 6 or 7 guy at the position, especially with first base being pretty shallow. So yeah, I'm all in on Freeman. I think that he's a stud.
I believe, if I'm looking at this correctly, I believe he went 5th out of the first baseman in the middle of the 3rd round of a 15-team league to our buddy Scott Bogman over in this league. He went after Goldschmidt, Rizzo, Miggy, and Votto, which I think is fair.
Did he go after Daniel Murphy or no?
I don't.
No, Murphy went early. Okay.
Murphy went about 5 or 6 picks before him. But okay, Murphy will have other eligibility. I always think of Murphy as a second baseman. No,
Murphy went after, actually. He went at pick.
Oh, you're right. You're right. No, he went about 5 or 6 after. So yeah, he went before.
I took
Murphy,
and I was just thinking about it. I'd probably still rather have Murphy. But anyways,
I think I'd rather have Freeman.
I think that's a high end on Freeman. If you look at some of the players around him, that's, you know, VR, Cespedes, Nelson Cruz, Corey Kluber, Buster Posey went, you know, right after as well. So, I mean, I think that that's a decent spot for Freeman, but I think that you'll be able to get him for a little bit lower going into next year. I think, you know, we're obviously looking at these values during this mock and, you know, looking at kind of gauging where people will be at next season. But I think Freeman will be available a little bit later than that. You know, if you think about it, 90th pick during this year's draft equates to, you know, the eighth round or so. So even if he bumps up to a top five guy, I would expect, you know, fourth, fifth round to be more of where he kind of sits.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Freddie Freeman going into next season?
I agree with what Mike said. I think fourth, fifth round seems appropriate in 12-team formats or so. I need to change my view on players like this, and it's something as a fantasy owner you learn as you play more. And I took too much stock into the team around him being so bad, and I'm pretty much shocked that he was able to have this year. But I shouldn't have been. Like Mike said, he's 26. He's younger than I thought. Anyways, 26 years old. I was kind of surprised. Everything is ticking upwards, and I don't think he's a 30 homer bat. I think, like, again, what Mike said, I think he's a 25 homer guy. The lineup's only going to get better around him for the years coming, so that can't hurt him. I'm a big Freddie Freeman guy, I guess now. I wasn't before, so that's kind of interesting. But I think, like you said, I think fifth or sixth around at first base seems about right to me.
I was a big proponent of Freddie Freeman. As we all know, I'm the voice of reason on this podcast consistently. And I talked about how I've talked about how protection is a myth and we shouldn't worry
about
that.
As long as
you
don't talk about pitchers, you're good.
I was a big proponent. So, I mean, am I surprised he's hit 32 home runs? Yes, I am surprised by that. I think of him, or I thought of him more as a 25 home run kind of guy coming into the season. And with the lineup around him, I did not necessarily expect him to get to over 30, but I think this is somewhat legitimate. I think there will be a tad bit of regression, you know, a just extremely high BABIP at 377, but he is a guy who tends to have a fairly high one to begin with, but I think the average could come down a little bit. I think maybe he loses a few home runs, but I think he is probably closer to 30 home runs next year than he is to 25. So I would take the over on like 27.5.
Yeah, I can see that.
And I have no problem where he went, you know. Especially with the lack of depth at first base, I think he is a top 45, top 50 player next year. And I'm pretty sure I'll have him ranked that way.
I agree. I'll have him up there too.
Let's go ahead and move on. Talk about Carlos Rodon, who is having who had his best start of his career. Was it last night on Sunday? He's going into next season. It looks like he's going to be he's going to have a little bit of helium with him. He went 123rd in our most recent draft. Just right ahead of Kenta Maeda. Maeda was the next pitcher off the board right after Mike took Lance McCullers. Matt, what are your thoughts on Rondon coming into next season?
His stock is definitely trending up for me. Beginning of the season, he was more of a two-pitch guy. He was a fastball and a slider. I mean, there's a quote from Rick Hahn, the GM of the White Sox, says you're not going to be throwing 40% sliders for a long time. In our opinion, Carlos can be a front-end type starter, and it's a matter of him developing along those lines and getting him there. Later what he was saying later on is he needs to develop that third pitch, and he's started to do that now. He's throwing that changeup now. Now it's a legit weapon. He's actually throwing it 10% of the time or so in the last couple starts, and that's more than it's way more than it was before, and it's enough to hitters have to sit on it now, or not sit on it, but you have to look for it. And that changeup it's been a mixed bag so far, but I mean he was regarded as being a guy that's going to develop a good changeup in the future, and it looks like it. He's already got that monster slider that's been as advertised since he was, you know, out of NC State, and the White Sox made a significant investment in him in the draft, and it's going to pay off. And I tweeted something about this like a couple weeks ago. I said the White Sox big two with has now officially turned into the big three. I'm on the Rodon train for next year.
Yeah, I am as well. I was hoping that he had a struggle or two here in the last month in I think one or two starts.
Yeah, two star stretch. He gave up four earned runs or six earned runs or something like that.
Yeah,
in both
he gave
games.
Up he gave up six earned runs in back to back games. One of them was a three home run game he gave up against Kansas City, and the other was against Cleveland. So it's really nice to see him then come back 2 weeks or less than 2 weeks later against Cleveland and strike out 11, only walk three, give up only two hits in eight innings. So that to me is a really encouraging sign that a team that kind of knocked him around and comes back 10 days later and shuts him down. You know, I was hoping that maybe the helium wouldn't be there after, you know, kind of a rough stretch here towards the end of the season.
Yeah.
And he would end up on one of my sleeper lists, but it looks like that, at least from where we're standing in our mock drafts, that that he could have a fair amount of helium coming in next season. But I'm willing to pay for it. You know, I think people have been felt burnt by him, and I think we tend to forget that sometimes, especially pitching prospects, tend to you know, sometimes take a little bit of time to kind of put things together at the major league level, and I expect big things from Carlos Rodon moving forward. Mike, what are your thoughts on Rodon?
Go ahead, Matt. What were you going to say?
Sorry, I keep cutting you off today, Mike. My fault.
No, you're cool.
We just did. So that puts him behind. McCullers went a couple picks ahead of him. Matt Harvey, Danny Duffy, Aaron Sanchez. I think that sounds about right. I just wanted to say what you guys thought about that.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with the guys that went ahead of him. I'm not a big Felix guy. I think Felix is on the down end of his career. But I have no problem with where Rondon made went. I actually thought he'd be around a little bit longer. I'm actually surprised how high he went. That was a little bit interesting to me that he went here. I thought maybe I could get him not with my upcoming picks that are coming up, but with the picks after that. So I was a little surprised with that, but I think it's fair value. Mike, what are your thoughts on Rondon?
Yeah, Rodon ended up going 18 picks approximately higher than he went in NFBC drafts. In NFBC, he ended up going 141. In this draft, he went 123. You know, what I like the most about Rodon, you got me saying Rondon,
yeah,
Justin,
I know,
appreciate it.
I keep wanting to throw the N in there.
Yeah, it's because there's so many other Rondones in the world. Yeah. But what I like is that in the first half, he was very inconsistent, you know, and when you look at his first half stats, you know, 4.24 ERA, 1.46 whip, you know, it's also backed up by a, you know, 4.03 expected ERA. The strikeouts are nice, and then, you know, the walks actually have been under control a bit, but the first pitch strike rate is bad. It's about 50%, which is certainly not a good sign. He gave up, you know, 15% home run to fly ball rate in the first half, and, you know, it kind of trickled into the second half as well, but since August, he's been a lot more consistent from start to start. 3.12 ERA through that time, giving up a 45% ground ball rate, which is certainly nice to see. Still maintaining the 9 strikeout per 9 rate, which is also good to see as well. The Baseball HQ does this thing called the pure quality starts and disaster, dominant starts and disaster, and they have a ratio with that. And whenever you have a disaster start, it's kind of, you know, self-explanatory. It means that you gave up more hits and runs in, you know, a certain amount of innings pitched without striking out enough guys. So essentially that's called a quote unquote disaster. He's only had two of those since the calendar switched over to August. In the first half, he had at least 7 of them. So that goes to show me that, you know, from the second half on, or at least until August on, he has been able to maintain consistency. I think that also correlates with the changeup kind of becoming more of a factor for him in his arsenal. He's throwing that about 16% of the time, actually, since August, since the calendar turned to August. So that third pitch is certainly paying dividends. I like what I've seen since August. I think 123 is paying for about what his value would be, you know, even if he has a breakout season next year, you know, I still think that that's, you know, about appropriate value. So I don't think you're going to get a ton of a disc or a big discount by taking Rodon in drafts next year, especially based on, you know, kind of some of the more helium he'll get in the offseason here. But I do think that he's going to be a nice starting pitcher three or two option. And, you know, regardless, he's going to be a fine guy on your team.
All right, let's move on to Max Kepler, who since having his kind of hot streak about a month or so ago, he's been pretty much ice cold. So, Matt, you being the prospect guy, is this just a cold streak, or is this something we need to be concerned with Max Kepler?
I think it's kind of going to be something that he is going to run into a lot in his career because, I mean, his plate skills aren't as developed as they're still developing. I mean, he's still only 23 years old. He hasn't been around that long. He's been playing baseball for what, 5 years only, mm-hmm. six at the most. And obviously guys like that, strike zone judgment and pitch recognition, they did develop early, and he didn't really have that youth baseball moment where it was developing. He's the son of a couple of professional dancers, I believe. And he's got the athletic ability to be there. I just think this is going to be a weird guy. I mean, I've always kind of mentioned this before. I think Kepler's going to be the guy. He's going to put it together in a couple of years, and he's going to be outstanding. And you're going to love to have him on your team. And then some years he's just going to be terrible. I think his career arc is going to be strange. It's going to be a completely unique. He might float around his third, fourth major league ball club before he puts it together and has a really nice run. And he's going to be inconsistent. He's a high upside play. I don't know if the average will ever be above 260 consistently, but, I mean, he can hit 20, 25 homers in a few years. It'll be interesting to see as he gets bigger where the speed goes. It's already not very prevalent, so, I mean, he might lose a handful of stolen bases you get now. I'm still buying in, all that being said, because, I mean, when he puts it together, he's going to be a monster. It's going to be sexy as hell when he does it. But he's going to be a frustrating fantasy player to own.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Max Kepler moving into next season?
Yeah, I'm buying still. I think that I actually like that he's been struggling a bit, because then I think it'll keep his price down for me at least. You know, I don't know if he's been taken in this draft yet. I actually don't think he has.
No, he hasn't.
Yeah, so, and I think that he will be somebody that probably is taken outside of the, you know, what, 175, 200 area. At least that's where I value him. And I think that that's really good value, especially based on, you know, kind of a lottery pick, you know, possibility for somebody like Kepler. I think he still has a lot of growing to do. I mean, if you look at his frame, he's still kind of lanky, not really filled out quite yet. I think with a nice offseason of really, you know, kind of hitting the weights a bit and, you know, kind of harnessing some of his game, he will be able to be a potential breakout guy for next year. He has been hitting the ball way less hard. His second half hard hit percentage is bottom 15 amongst all outfielders, actually a little bit ahead of Adam Jones, Odubel Herrera, Ian Desmond, who I know is going very high in drafts, Dexter Fowler, just to name a few guys. But what I like is that, you know, even though he has a bad batting average, he hasn't been striking out at like an alarming clip. Nope. You know, yes, he has a 24% strikeout rate, which isn't amazing, but at least it's not, you know, 30 plus, which we could easily see. And on top of that, he's walking 10% of the time. So, you know, for me, you know, and that the 10% is also coming in the second half. So he's still maintaining a nice walk rate, even though his batting average has been so terrible. His BABIP is 260, and I understand that hitters kind of make their own BABIP, but I don't think it will be that bad. He certainly will get some, you know, BABIP regression to the mean there next season. His power, I think, is legit. I mean, he has 17 home runs this year and 376 at bats. So, you know, yeah, he might have been struggling here in the second half, but regardless, I mean, I think that this is a guy that can certainly, you know, hit at least 20 next season with a full complement of at-bats. I'm buying. I think that he's going to be at least a, you know, top 30 outfielder next year, maybe even better.
I think it's worth mentioning that he missed some time with a neck strain. So, I mean, that's tied a lot to the hard hit percentage. You know what I mean? The line drive rate, yeah. All that stuff going down. I mean, Harper dealt with the neck and, you know, he – kind of, I mean, every injury is different, obviously, but I mean, he saw his numbers dip in correlation to that, and I think that might be what you're seeing with Kepler here. I think he's an intriguing guy, so it'd be fun to watch.
Yeah, he hit a home run on Sunday, so maybe he's starting to turn things around a little bit. I know, Matt, you said that like he's got future 20, 25 home run potential. I think that potential is here already. I mean, he's in 425 plate appearances, 17 home runs this season.
Yeah, I like the 37 extra base hits is nice.
I think he is a guy that is going, especially because of this cold streak, is going to go under the radar. I think he is a perfect sleeper pick. I'm right with Mike. I think he's got top 30 outfielder potential. I've always loved Max Kepler. He is an athlete, a kid who hasn't played baseball his entire life, so he's still kind of learning. So there are going to be kind of bumps along the road, and they're going to be cold streaks. And he's one of those guys you're just going to have to kind of set it and forget it, and not feel that kind of urge to drop him if he goes through a cold streak. But I do love Max Kepler. He will end up on the majority of my teams next year. Sure.
Another thing to watch as far as the at-bats go, I mean, you made a great point about the power out of the numbers being in the limited, 108 games played. One thing that's going to develop with him and the Twins have a lot of talent in the organization. I mean, they're not playing like it, but they do. One thing I've noticed with Kepler, he's developing a platoon split. He's struggling against lefties hard, and that's going to cut down his at-bats. And he's always going to have a number capped if he's not, if he's not a full-time player. And I think that tied in with the Twins need to stop messing with him. Is he going to be a first baseman? Is he going to be a right fielder? Just let him play right field. You let him use his athleticism. Stick him in one spot and just let him play. I kind of correlate him to, I think, a good comp for immediate next season for him with a little bit better plate skills is like a Randall Grichuk. Kind of like a guy, let him play. Stop, making him do this and change his approach and let him develop as his own. He's still young. He's only 23 years old. And he's got big pop. Just let him play right field every day and see what
and
you got.
He's a very good defender. He's the kind of guy that...
Yeah, he really is. Yeah.
Even if he's struggling at the plate, he should still get, some decent plate appearances just because he's one of their better defenders out there. And, they shouldn't be running Sano out in right field. They
could play in center, but they have Buxton, so no one's going to play. No one's going to be Buxton in center field, but Kepler could play center if he had to. Yeah, I agree.
So I'm not as worried about his plate appearances long term. I think this is just a time in which the league has started to adjust to him, so he just needs to adjust back, and maybe it's taking him a little bit longer because he doesn't have the years of baseball experience behind him.
And that's all completely valid observations that I guess. I'm just excited for Kepler. I think he's a polarizing player, that's for sure.
For sure. Let's go ahead and move in and talk about the mock draft we've been going on. We talked a little bit about it last week with Ryan Bloomfield of Baseball HQ. So if you haven't heard that episode, definitely go back and listen when we talk about the first kind of 43 picks in this 15-team, two-catcher standard league, standard 5x5 format. We are currently 9 rounds in. Matt just made the 13th pick of the 9th round. We're coming up, looking to finish that up. I had to refresh everybody's memory. I had the last pick. Mike had the first pick, and then Matt was the 13th pick. And so I wanted to kind of mention kind of some guys that we didn't necessarily talk about last week. And most of which have gone since we last talked. The first thing I wanted to mention was Matt brought this up offline. He asked me, why did I take Starling Marte over Charlie Blackmon in the second round? And so I wanted to ask Mike and Matt first, who would you rather have going into next season? And then I'll defend my pick. Charlie Blackmon or Starling Marte? Why don't we start with you, Matt?
Well, I mean, we made the caveat, of course, with Blackmon staying in Colorado and not being traded. Assuming Blackmon stays in Colorado, I think I'm still going Blackmon. It's close, obviously. I mean, they were my alternative when I got sniped on my second round pick and instead of I was going to take them earlier in the draft. I took Seager over Rizzo, which was a mistake on my part, I think, but it was a quick reaction for me. But my debate was if Rizzo or Seager or Rizzo was gone, I was going to take Blackmon or Marte, and they happened to go back-to-back, and it worked out for you, Justin, getting Marte. But I was just curious with Blackmon. I mean, the power's there. The speed is still there. I mean, the steals aren't where they were last year, but I think the uptick in power and the uptick in batting average, which is kind of fluky, the batting average thing kind of, but the uptick in all those numbers has to inflate the value. If he stays in Colorado, he's going to play. He's going to be 30 next year. I'm all in on Blackmon for next year. I like Marte also, but, I mean, I'd choose Blackmon if he's staying in Coors.
Mike, what are your thoughts? Would you rather have Marte or Blackmon?
I'd still rather have Marte. And for me, like, I love what Blackmon's done in the power category this year. It certainly has been eye-opening. That's the only reason that they're even close, to be honest, is because Blackmon has come out of nowhere and hit 28 home runs this season and still managed to steal 17 bags, even though he had a foot problem to begin the season. And also, if you look at his home road splits this year, he has been doing a little bit better on the road, actually. I mean, the batting average is a little better at home, naturally, but you know, his home run to fly ball is 19% on the road, 13% at home. That goes to show me that, you know, it doesn't really matter whether he's at home or on the road. I did do a long piece on Friends with Fantasy Benefits.com a few months ago about Charlie Blackmon and Gregory Polanco in terms of long-term value. And, you know, I ended up coming to the conclusion that I liked Polanco a little bit more for the long term. But, you know, Blackman's 30 years old. You know, if you look at it since his breakout season in 2014, they're right next to each other in a ton of things, him and Marte. It's kind of crazy. They're like literally right next to each other in batting average. Blackmon leads by 1 point, 298 to 297. In terms of stolen bases, Marte has 107. Blackmon has 88 during that time. But then he also has, Blackmon has 64 home runs to 41 for Marte. You know, this year on the ESPN Player Rater, they're almost right next to each other again. Number three on the list is Blackmon. Number five is Marte, with Chris Bryant kind of in the middle there since he has that eligibility. But, you know, for me, I still like Marte for next season, just because you can 100% bank on the stolen bases. The power for me, while it didn't grow this season, he had double digits in three straight years. And, you know, he also has kind of suffered from a few, you know, different ailments this year as well. So if he comes back healthy, you know, you could definitely, you know, bank on a double digit home run season for next year. The batting average will always be an asset for him. So I just, you know, with the fact that he's 3 years younger, and the fact that I think that there's still a little bit more upside in the power projection, I'm going to go with Marte.
You weren't worried about the home runs being only 9 this year?
That's what I was just kind of mentioning. Is like,
yeah, no, I heard you on that, but I mean, I was just, that's not a concern at all for you for the 10 home run drop from the previous season.
Well, yeah, at least this year so far, he has almost 100 less at-bats, you know, due to injury.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a
and, you know, if you look at his home run rate, home run to fly ball rate, it's literally 11 percentage points down. So he had a career high home run to fly ball rate in 2015, which kind of shows me that the 19 was a bit lucky, but also the 9 this year is a little bit unlucky to me as well. So I think that you can kind of find, you know, kind of middle ground there, which leans on 12, 13, 14, which is what he did the 2 years prior. So, I mean, if I was going to do a projection on Marte right now, I would say 37 stolen bases and 12 home runs with a 290-plus batting average. And, you know, at least, depending on the Pirates, you know, lineup, if the Pirates ever got a better lineup, it would be amazing. But, you know, if the Pirates lineup does well, then you can bank on at least 75 to 80 runs scored as well, decent RBI numbers. So, I think that Marte is the guy.
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit, you know, in the debate in our little pre-chat thing there, Justin. I mean, you made the caveat of, like, if it's closer to the season starting and Blackmon is still in Colorado, that you might go that way?
Yeah, I mean, and that's, for me, one of the big issues with, and I love Charlie Blackmon. Don't get me wrong. Like, these guys are, like, super close together for me in my ranks. Probably back to black. I mean, that is literally where I had them.
You just said back to black.
Back to black, baby.
Back to black.
Once you go black, you don't go back. Is that what
Don't forget that Charlie Blackmon has a dirty, rapey beard still.
Yes, it he does, has which changed. Gives him points.
Yeah, it definitely subtracts points for me.
No, come on. As a man who, you know, has a dirty, rapey beard, dirty, rapey beards give you extra points, and, you know, that I'm willing to go with. But, you know, the main reason is I think that there is a Colorado outfielder getting moved.
And Cargo.
It's between Cargo and it's between Blackmon. Now, I think Matt is under the impression and the belief that it's probably going to be Cargo, which makes sense. He's going the last year of his contract. His contract no longer is that expensive. It's $20 million for 1 year. Which, considering the player you get from Cargo, isn't bad at all. No. You know, Blackman still has a number of years of control left, I believe. I'm not 100%.
Two or three, I believe. No, yeah. More than three for sure, but at least two.
So, and he's much cheaper. So, yeah. I mean, you know, the Rockies could easily say, we'd rather have Blackman, he's cheaper. But they also may say, we may get more for Charlie Blackman on the market. So he may demand more back.
Yeah.
You know, so that to me becomes kind of the interesting thing of which one of these guys get moved. If we get closer to the start of the season, if we're drafting in late March, and, you know, we're mid March and Charlie Blackman's still a Rocky, well, then that's a different story. Then I start saying, well, I have a real reason to possibly put Blackman over Marte. But for now, I know exactly where Marte is going to be, and I'm not 100% sure that that Blackman will be in Colorado. And is just like Mike said, I believe he would be able to play outside of Colorado and be a very productive player.
That's going to be Corey Dickerson.
Well, that's a different argument to have that I'm sure we'll have when we start talking about our biggest busts of our predictions maybe next week. But, you know, I don't think he is a, you know, borderline first round player if he's not in Colorado. So
I agree with that. I can get behind that. Yeah.
So that's the reason I went Marte. I went with the idea that I don't know where he's going to be. And if I'm pretending that this mock draft is like a real draft that's happening now, I've got to kind of bake that into his value. And that's the reason I took Starling Marte.
It's a good solid argument all around. It's fun to see where we are in a couple months about this debate.
Let's go ahead and move on to the next guy that caused quite a stir when Kyle Schwarber was taken in the fourth round with the 59th overall pick by our good buddy Christopher Welsh from the In This League Fantasy Network. Matt, you had the biggest issue with this one. Why don't you go in and explain why?
It's a two-catcher league, number one. But, I mean, you have to go under the impression, I'm believing in most leagues, that Schwarber is not going to have catcher eligibility anymore. I mean, I think that's...
I think in the majority of leagues, you may be right. However, I will say this. One, in Yahoo, where the ITL guys play most of their leagues, I think he could still have catcher eligibility. Well,
that's game changer then, because if it's the catcher eligibility, it's a very nice pick at 59.
Why would he, though? Because he barely got catcher eligibility the year prior.
Why would Miguel Sano have shortstop eligibility when he came up?
Because he obviously he's built like a shortstop. No.
Yeah, he hadn't played. Yahoo is weird with their eligibilities. They don't go by traditional eligibilities. And so I think there is a chance. And remember the year that Victor Martinez lost the entire year?
Yeah.
You know, he was still given he was still given catcher in CBS and Yahoo.
That's a good comp. I totally forgot about that. I do remember taking advantage of that. But
according to the draft software we're using, Kyle Schwarber's a catcher.
Yep, he is. If it's a catcher, it completely changes it. So it's a catcher, they got a steal at 59. I mean, I'm kind of – I'm in the camp that Schwarber isn't as good as people think he is. I mean –
Then why won't you trade him to me?
Because I still think there's serious value there. I just don't – I see a platoon outfielder that is a defensive liability. I see a guy he would never – I mean, he's going to have monster power. The batting average probably won't be there. It could be. I mean, he has a strong hit tool. But, I mean, he's got such a strong platoon issue that I think playing time is going to be a little bit thinner than you would think. And I eventually have to think sometime in the near future he gets traded. Not this year, but maybe in a couple.
Yeah, I agree with you. It was too high for me, personally. I'm not the biggest of Kyle Schwarber fans to begin with. When the pick was made, or actually before the pick was made and I saw him kind of on the list, I went, well, he's not going to have catcher eligibility. And I didn't even think about the fact that Yahoo might that there could be other leagues that he did in the software. You know, with that being said, I think it was a fine pick. Two catcher league, catchers should go earlier than your traditional formats. I've been a little bit surprised more catchers haven't gone at this point, being almost 150 picks in.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, I do worry about his ability to play the outfield. If he's replaced defensively in a number of games, that's going to limit the amount of plate appearances he can see. I do worry about platoon issues. That'll limit the amount of plate appearances that he could see. I mean, the Cubs obviously love the kid because the Yankees tried to make him part of the deal.
Yeah.
For Chapman, and they would not go for that.
They should love him. I mean, the 75-80 raw power, I mean, that's not easy to find, even with the home runs being up, and I think that might hurt his value also a little bit because home runs across the league are way up, and I think it's easier to find a 2016 version of shoot me somebody, Mark Trumbo later, several rounds later than this. You know what I mean? And I think, and it's going to be interesting to see if the home run continued next year. Because if it's something as simple as the baseball being different, I mean, this home run barrage in the league might not be around next year. It's very interesting. It kind of changes the entire landscape of things, to be honest.
For sure, Mike. What are your thoughts on Kyle Schwarber, where he went, and then kind of his value for next year?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, this comes with the caveat. If he is eligible for catcher, then it makes it a much more justifiable selection. I think that goes without saying. From a, you know, player evaluation standpoint, I think you guys have really touched on a lot of things. You mentioned that he could get substituted defensively whenever, you know, a lefty comes up later on in the game. Absolutely, that can happen. They have a prized possession in Wilson Contreras now that they did not have 2 years essentially 2 years ago at this point, you know, when Schwarber was in the thick of things here. And, you know, you mentioned the platoon splits. He absolutely has a platoon split. You know, he batted 278 against righties, 143 against lefties. That's absolutely a problem. And he benefited from a massive first, you know, couple months in the league. Once the calendar hit August in 2015, things just really went bad for him. It was not nearly as good of a season. You know, he batted 233 in the second half in 2015, and his, I mean, strikeout rate was still, I mean, 33%. That's absolutely hideous. And, you know, and he also benefited from a season long 24% home run to fly ball rate, which I just don't see continuing. I suppose it could or come close to that. But, you know, for me, if you're, you know, paying that for a guy that is going to hit 20 home runs at the catcher position, I still think that's fair. I think the batting average is going to be too, you know, kind of volatile, and you're not going to be able to know. Gary Sanchez went later. It's pick 71. I would have went with him, you know, leaps and bounds ahead, because you know he's going to get playing time at catcher. You know he's going to be catcher eligible. You know that his power is legit as well, and you can also kind of rest easy knowing that you got a bit of a discount, you know, based on where Schwarber went. But you know, for me, I was very kind of skeptical on Schwarber coming into this season before he even got injured. He was the 37th player taken going into drafts this year. So the fact that, you know, he only dropped 22 spots, you know, after missing a whole entire season, and, you know, not even knowing whether he's going to be eligible for the position or not, just for me, I feel like there's, when we're trying to, you know, weigh risk prior to a season starting, and we don't have information really in front of us except for numbers and what we've seen, banking on somebody that has so much other risk involved defensively and based on the team construct and, you know, the platoon splits, I just feel like it's just way too many things stacking against them.
All right, let's move on. I'm gonna make quick mention, or I'm gonna bring up some other picks that we personally had. The first one being, I took Billy Hamilton with the 76 overall pick in the sixth round. I wanted to hear what your guys' thoughts. Billy Hamilton is always a guy who is, how do I say this?
Polarizing?
Polarizing's perfect. He is very polarizing in the fantasy industry. Some people really buy into him having a huge amount of value. Some people don't want the risk associated with Billy Hamilton. Where do you guys stand after what has to be considered an extremely successful season for him? Mike, why don't you go ahead?
Where'd you take Hamilton, 76?
Yeah, I took him as, the 76th overall player in the sixth round.
Yeah, well, I'm the wrong person to ask about Billy Hamilton because I have pretty much declared my love for the guy, even though it's probably irrational. And, you know, he already, I mean, he's had so many injuries.
I felt it was a really good value, personally.
I think it's amazing value. You know, for me, their injuries are still a problem because he's like 110 pounds soaking wet. And, you know, he seems to get injured, you know, when a, you know, bird hair falls from the sky or bird feather falls from the sky and hits him. Yeah, bird hair. a BH falls from the sky. But, you know, for me, I think that the value, the fact that stolen bases are such a prized asset nowadays, and you're just getting a guy that when he gets on base is an automatic threat to steal two bases, I mean, is just insane. He's the only player with 55 plus stolen bases in each of the last three seasons. He has led baseball during that time, and it's not close. I understand all of the, you know, batting average risks, because that certainly is in play here. The 260 batting average this year isn't amazing, but that's certainly something that I can live with. And, you know, the fact that he hit 250 in 2014 shows me that, you know, two of the last 3 years he can hit above 250. So regardless of the down year in 2015, he still stole over 50 bases, even though he had a bad batting average, and he's, you know, still is somebody that is going to win you a category by himself. So I think that he is still a great pick in that area. He was $29 was his value this season, according to Baseball HQ. He had $29 of value in 2014, 26 in 2015. The fact that you got him outside of pick 70, and he probably will put up on stolen bases alone the same amount of value as probably second and third round players, tells me that the value is immense. And we haven't even, he can steal 70 if he actually, you know, plays a whole season and gets a little bit more opportunity. The guy can steal 70 bases. So I love it.
Yeah. And between, I mean, if you look in my draft, I've gone speed heavy early. I took Starling Marte in the second round. I took D Gordon in the fourth and Billy Hamilton in the sixth. I can just load up on power guys, and average and be fine, you know, rest of the draft for my offense.
Yeah, you've won the stolen base category already with Marte, with guys, Hamilton, and Gordon. If they were to play full seasons, you are looking at least 140 stolen bases by them, by themselves.
Yeah, and so I don't have to worry about the scarcity later in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Billy Hamilton going at pick 76?
I think that's great value for you. He's a player. Hamilton's a player. I mean, we talked about him a month or so ago. I've done a 180 on him as well. With the steals being so scarce, I mean, and him supplying 58 steals in less than 120 games is crazy. He's always going to be susceptible to the little nicks and dents more than most guys are because you know, he uses his legs, and that's always going to be something you have to deal with. But, I mean, this in a roto draft like this, and with you stocking up on steals, I mean, that's a no-brainer. Hamilton used to be a guy for me that I didn't think he'd hit enough. I kind of eliminated him from my draft boards a lot of times early because he was going so high. But he would win you a category all the time. But, I mean, now his batting average, like Mike said, it's not killing you anymore. And it's definitely worth the investment for me. I'm going to look to get Hamilton, and if you can get him outside the top 70 like you just did, I think you should be very happy with that.
I think he's a guy that may get, I mean, it didn't happen in this draft, but I think he's a guy who may get overdrafted quite a bit next year. People are going to look at the average from this year and go, ooh, maybe this is the new career norm. I don't think necessarily it is. I think could easily take a step back.
Sure.
But I don't think it's going to be as bad as we've seen in years past. And the really nice thing about Billy Hamilton is he's turned into a pretty good center fielder.
Yeah,
he's like great.
The defense is legit. I wouldn't be surprised if he wins a gold glove at some point out there in center field. So, I mean, he's a guy that he now defensively is an asset. So now you have the amount of speed he brings on the base paths, and you have him as a defensive asset on a team that likes to run, likes to push it on the base paths in the Reds. I think that he is, you know, made himself into an everyday player in spite of the fact that he doesn't take walks. You know, he has to make up for his lack of hitting ability with his speed sometimes. But, yep. You know, because he's so good defensively, because he pushes it on the base paths in a way the team really kind of embraces, he's turned himself into a guy that was really at risk of not having a job at some point this season, into a kind of cornerstone for that franchise.
I think a lot of people are kind of down on Billy Hamilton. He has to kind of, going into this year, I mean, he has that stigma of being a guy that was moved off a shortstop. Mm-hmm. And I know that doesn't mean anything, like, in the fantasy aspect of it. Well, I mean, as far as position eligibility, it does. But, I mean, a guy getting moved off shortstop is automatically looked at as a bad thing. Like,
yeah.
And him getting put into center field has been great. And his batted ball profile for this year is outstanding. 2% more line drives, which is kind of marginal difference, but hitting 5% balls more on the ground, 7% balls less in the air. That is humongous for Dew with his skill set. Mm-hmm. If he's growing as a hitter and he can keep that going, he's going to be a monster.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And you talked about his value going up, you know, but for me, like, even if he gets inflated, you know, to the highest that he would have to go to where I'm like kind of skeptical on drafting him, if he's like a top 40 player, and I just don't see him going up to that point.
There will be someone who does that. I mean, Mike Podhorser is a huge proponent of taking the big speed guys early on. He was a big proponent of taking D. Gordon in the first round this year.
But even if he takes him 40th, I don't hate that. You know, I'm not going to sit there.
No, I don't either. Like, I feel like Billy Hamilton is a top 50 player.
Yeah, even in his worst year, I mean, which was 2015, he ended up being 90th overall on the ESPN Player Rater. So, I mean, like, even if the worst happens, he still is a top 90 guy. So even mm-hmm. if you take him 40th, it's not like you got crushed based on Billy Hamilton. You'd have to lose on all your other picks.
It's really exactly. weird saying that Billy Hamilton has, like, the highest floor in fantasy baseball, but he might.
He has one of the highest floors based on the speed alone.
Yep.
All right. Let's move on, talk about a couple of Mike's picks. At the end of the sixth round, beginning of the seventh round, on the wheel, Mike took Miguel Sano and Jason Kipnis. One pick I really like, one pick I really don't like. So, Mike, defend your picks.
Guess? Oh, I want to guess.
Oh, go ahead and guess.
I'm guessing you liked the Kipnis and hated the Sano.
Actually, the opposite way.
Oh, really? Okay. This will be fun. All right.
So, Mike, go ahead and defend your picks.
Well, with Sano, at least, like, I don't really feel like I need to defend it. I think that his power speaks for itself. I was looking for some power, and, you know, I just ended up going that route. What rounds did I actually take? I'm trying to remember.
6 and 7.
Okay, so...
Picks 90 and 91.
Yeah, so 90-91, if you look at drafts going into this year, at least with Kipnis was going, you know, 88, which is about the same as I ended up taking him here. I just like the value with him, and I'm not really a Kipnis guy, but, you know, 4 of the last 5 years now, he has accumulated $20 or more in value. He had a little bit of a spike in home runs this year, which I don't necessarily count on.
A little bit of a spike.
Well, if you look at 2013, he had 17, so this isn't something that's extremely out of the ordinary, and his home run to fly ball rate is only 2% more this season than it was in 2013. So, you know, this is a guy that's 29. It's not like he's ancient. You know, the fact that he hit 20 or 20 plus home runs this year isn't something that's not sustainable to me. I think that he can certainly hit 20 again next year. For me, it's just the value. I thought that it was appropriate value for the guy. If you look at the second base kind of pool going forward, I don't love the names. I think that I can certainly be okay with a lot of the guys left, but you know, Scope still has some concerns for me, even though I love the power and he's still a candidate for me to be taking him, so I don't want to give too much on him. But you know, I really don't care for Dustin Pedroia anymore. There's a couple other guys on this list I'm not going to talk about that I still want, but you know, overall I thought the value was fine with somebody like Kipnis, and you know, going forward he's just another guy that has a high floor, not necessarily a high ceiling, but doesn't have a low floor, so I'm in for a guy that is going to be, you know, safe. As far as Sano, you know, we've already talked about him a pretty good amount over the last, you know, few weeks or so. But, you know, he's really turned me on with the power. I think that next year is going to be an absolute breakout year for him. I like, you know, getting a guy kind of post-hype. You know, this year he was getting a ton of hype going into the season. And, you know, going into next year, I think he's going to have a little bit less helium on him. Not as many people are going to be willing to take him that high. So for me personally, you know, I'm definitely in to, you know, gamble on somebody like Sano, especially, you know, within, you know, close to the top 100. So I don't really feel like I have much to defend here. You know, somebody like Sano is being taken insanely early this year. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I think he was
he was a top 60, top 50 player this year.
Yeah, top 60. So 60th overall.
Having any positional eligibility in most leagues. I mean, he was DH only in the majority of leagues.
Yeah, so there you go. I mean, I ended up getting a 30 pick discount based on where people were comfortable taking him this year. So I'm willing to definitely take that. And, you know, like I said with Kipnis, it's just a high floor proposition. Right behind him was Alex Bregman.
you know, for me, I'm taking Kipnis all day. Even though I love Bregman, I'm not comfortable taking a guy that's going to be going into his second year, regardless of his upside, you know, based on that. And, you know, if you look at some of the picks in front, you know, you have DJ LeMahieu. Yeah, he's been solid. I'm not necessarily, I don't love LeMahieu long term. Evan Longoria went in front of Jason Kipnis, a guy that we've all kind of mentioned is, you know, not going to sustain his power. Jose Ramirez went 9 picks ahead. I mean, there's a lot of other guys that you can kind of mention don't have, you know, as stable of skills and, you know, still are being taken in front.
Yeah, I mean, one of my biggest issues is kind of the jump in his fly ball rate, the jump in his home run to fly ball rate, the jump in his pull percentage, the jump in his hard contact percentage. I think some of those numbers are going to regress. And so
but how far? You know, like that's the question.
That's the key right there.
He doubled, over doubled, or almost doubled, his home run to fly ball rate from last year.
But what I'm saying is that in 2013, where he showed he has power, it's only 2% more, you know? So yeah, he had down power years the last two, but are we saying that it's a completely, like, that players can't all of a sudden change the way that they approach their
plate appearances? Yeah, they can, but I'm not going to bank on it for next season.
I'm looking at Kipnis as having like sort of like a nagging injury last year, because if you look at his stolen base percentage, it was way down.
But he's an injury prone guy, so you can't just say he had a nagging injury last year and not say that needs to be built into his value for next year. This is a guy who's dealt with shoulder injuries and other injuries all throughout his career.
Yeah, you know? But what I'm saying is that his floor is high, regardless of all the injuries, regardless of the regression. Four of the last 4 years, he's had $20 or more in value. He's had double-digit stolen bases and or home runs in 3 of the last 5. I mean, and regardless, even last year and the year before when he didn't get double-digit home runs, he still supplied nice stolen base numbers. His batting average was still...
Like, he does have a decent floor because even when he doesn't hit for power, he's still going to provide speed.
And with all that said, I 100% probably will not be drafting Kipnis in drafts this year. Like, I'm just going, I haven't drafted Kipnis in an actual fantasy league in probably 4 years now because I've been kind of just over it. But for this draft in particular, I felt like it was good to go with the floor. And, you know, since it doesn't count, I don't have to bank on it.
And truth be told, I've been a huge Kipnis guy in the past. You know, I was a huge Kipnis guy when he came up. So I've always been kind of a fan of him. For me, I just worry about the nagging injuries, especially as he gets older. You know, I think that this is that some of these, you know, underlying numbers are a bit fluky. I think they'll take a step back. And I think we're looking at a guy who's more like a 15 home run hitter, you know, 15 to 20 stolen bases, 280 average, which is, you know, it's good. It's a good floor. It's a good baseline. But I want a little bit more upside, especially in a league this deep, you know, in the 6th, 7th round. So that was my main issue. Matt, what are your thoughts on Kipnis and Sano?
Well, I mean, Mike said I like Kipnis's floor. I think he's a combination of the player he was in 2013 and 14 rather than 2015, personally. And I'm right with Mike on all that. Sano, for me, he's too unstable to put a lot of bank in. I mean, I understand the power. I completely get that. It's monstrous. I wish the Twins – I mean, what's their plans with them for next year? It's got to be DH, right? I'm assuming he's going to be their DH every day.
You got to think that – I mean, well, Mauer's still under contract.
Yeah.
You got to think they're going to bring Park back. I would think they would move Plouffe at some point.
Yeah, probably. But, I mean, if Sano's not really a third baseman either.
I mean, they've – you know – at some point, they got to get Park back up to the big leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I guess they don't. They didn't spend a lot on Park.
Yeah, but let's be clear here. For next season alone, Sano is going to be third base and outfield eligible. So I don't care about the seasons going forward.
Sure,
next year, he's going to be third base and outfield eligible. So that's all. That also took into account when I was looking at him is the fact that he was going to be eligible at multiple places, and you know I would be able to move him around.
And they still have Mauer under contract till 2018.
Yeah, he's going to be there forever.
It's one of the worst contracts in baseball.
We're going to be dead, and he's still going to be on the Twins, just swinging that stick around.
He might be dead, especially what's going on with it, with his body these days.
Yeah, he's seen better days, huh? Yeah. But, I mean, as far as Sano, the strikeouts are going to pile up. The average is never going to be there, but that's not a killer. I mean, we all know, we talked about this a million times, batting average being low is not a killer. I just wanted someone, if I'm going to take, I still like Sano. I appreciate the value he gave us this year. I mean, being a top 60 player is honestly higher than I thought. I thought he would have been around where he was drafted. But I kind of think I don't like the play skills. He's one of those players I don't like. I don't like that profile. I'm still in on him long term, but I just don't think it's for next year, if that makes any sense. But.
Yeah, Park is owed $2.8 million in 2017, $3 million in 18, $3 million in 19. So I think there's a reasonable belief that you know, the Twins don't really need Park to play first. If they want to put Park put Sano there, you know, and work Park in, they can eat that, you know, $3 million a year for the next 3 years, or trade him away pretty easily. So it's the $23 million they owe Maurer for the next 2 years that become an issue. Yeah. Let's go ahead and move on. Talk about Chris Davis real quick. He went in eighth round, 114th overall. This is a guy who has 40 home runs this season. Matt, is this a little bit too low for a guy with so much power?
I think so. I think he's proved. I mean, he's the ballpark. We're talking about Chris with a K, by the way.
Yeah, Chris with a K, Davis.
I mean, he made probably the worst move for a right-handed power hitter in baseball, right? Going from Oakland to, or excuse me, from Milwaukee to Oakland, and it's proving that it doesn't matter. The average is never going to be there. He's never going to be an asset on base percentage leagues. But this is a 5x5 league, so that's not a big deal. And he's not going to contribute anything else but power. So I'm fine with it. I'll keep it short. I think it's too late, and it's a good deal for you, right? Do you take him?
No, actually, I believe it was Bogman. Was it Bogman? Bogman got him in the eighth round.
Well, good for him.
I would have taken him had he made it back to me. But I was unfortunate he was gone, so I took
David Dahl over him that round, which I'm fine with that. Matt Kemp went before him. I think I'd rather have Davis.
I took Dylan Betances and Garrett Cole, I believe, before him. One, there's a huge pitching run that I was in the middle of. And two, I felt like Betances, it should be one of the top three closers, top four closers off the board, and five had already gone. So it's like, yeah, I'm going to grab a guy that I think shouldn't still be on the board.
Yeah, I took Zach Britton right before that.
Yeah, which I'm fine with. Yeah. You know, I was a huge proponent of Chris Davis coming into the season, even after the trade. I think everybody in the industry was a huge proponent of him before the trade, and then a lot of people went running away screaming for the hills when he got traded to Oakland. And I was still on board. I was a huge proponent of him, got him in a majority of my leagues, and have gotten what I paid for and then some. I feel like this is way too low, personally. It's been an interesting draft because I feel like that this draft, like, I wish I had like two or three different, you know, picks along the way, because there have been so many guys that I'm like, oh my god, I have to choose between like these five guys I love this late. So I'm a huge Chris Davis fan. I think he will continue to hold the value he's had this year going into next season. Maybe he doesn't hit 40, but I think, you know, 30 plus 35 is a realistic expectation, and now we know he has a potential for more. Mike, what are your thoughts on Chris Davis?
Man, I've always loved Chris Davis, but I mean, before the season started, I pretty much was just shitting on him over and over and over and over and over again, because I just did
not
like...
Which he did
not
appreciate, by the way.
No, he didn't. He called me up. He's like, listen, you fucking douchebag, stop shitting on me on your podcast. Don't think I don't know that you and your 10 listeners aren't listening to you when you're going through all your advanced metrics.
When did we get 10? I thought we had like 6.
Well, we had 10.
Well, we had
10
at the beginning of the season. Oh, yeah, we've lost 4 since then.
Yeah, no. We've certainly lost even more now since we've talked about Chris Davis, because he's probably going to call all of his minions again. But I, like I said, I've always loved him. And, you know, I will no longer be talking shit about his move to Oakland, because, I mean, I looked at all of his home road splits, and that was kind of my argument before the season started, was the home road splits did not favor Davis moving to such a pitcher-heavy ballpark. But at the same time, no ballpark can hold him in. His home road splits this year have not been big. 19 home runs at home, 21 on the road, not a big difference. His batting average has been better on the road, 268 compared to 230 at home. But I love that the Athletics have essentially
essentially said, you know what, your biggest skill is power. Just shoot for the moon every single time. And he is certainly doing that. He was a 150th pick overall or 160th pick overall going into drafts this year, 42nd outfielder. You know, on the ESPN player rater, he is the 27th outfielder based on rank. Also, you know, you kind of factor in a lot of guys that are, you know, eligible for the outfield that usually wouldn't be, you know, kind of factor in, into those rankings. So he's more of a top 20-ish, you know, outfielder this year, which is amazing. Top 6 in home runs overall, which nobody would have thought coming into this season. You know, definitely, you know, being supported by a 26% home run to fly ball rate, but he has shown that, you know, in years past, he has been able to put up home run to fly balls that big. 25% last year in 2015, 29% in a short sample in 2013. I love Davis. I think that it's a fine value taking him where he did. I am still a little bit worried about the injury concerns, you know, going, you know, moving forward. He did have some problems last year, but he's accumulated 500 or more bats in two of the last three seasons. 28 years old, power's immense. Love the pick.
All right. Before we wrap up, I want to give every you know, each of you a chance, and myself a chance to talk about any other picks since we last spoke. So any picks, you know, after the 43rd pick of the draft that you found really interesting, positively or negatively, it's your choice. You know, say who took them, where they took them, and then give your thoughts. Mike, I'll start with you.
Well, I mean, first off, Matt took Trey Turner 48th overall. I think that that's a steal. He definitely should have been taken in the first round. I don't know why, whatever he was thinking. So, Matt, bravo to you. You know, I don't know how you passed on Matt Carpenter. Oh, wait, Matt Carpenter was taken right before you.
Right.
Sorry.
Before
you
I was going Turner anyways. No.
No, I love the Turner pick. I don't know if that draft price will work out, but I'm certainly willing to pay for that. I think that he might even go higher going into next year, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah. There's no way he goes that late.
Yeah, I think that he's going to be a top 30 player. So, fantasy owners, if you are listening now, you will definitely have to spend probably a third round pick, maybe even higher, to get to acquire Trey Turner for next season. D. Gordon going right before. I know we already kind of talked about it a little bit with him, but that's amazing pick.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'll give you that. You know, even before that a little bit, Ian Desmond at 44, he's going to be one of the harder players to project going into next season. I think that a lot of people are going to have a hard time really pinpointing where his value is. In the second half this year, we've seen him, you know, drop in home run to fly ball. He had an amazing first half, 15 home runs, 14 stolen bases. Since then, he's at 7 home runs, 6 stolen bases, .249 average as opposed to .317. The strikeouts have still been, you know, pretty bad, 26%. So, you know, going, you know, looking forward into 2017, he's at age 30. You know, we're going to be, you know, I was not a Ian Desmond guy going into this season. Obviously, I was wrong. We'll see where he's kind of valued going into next year. But the fact that he, you know, was taken 44th, I don't think it's a terrible pick, but I think it's just something that we'll have to monitor. Moving forward, I really like, I know we just had Bloomfield on, but I really like what he's been doing. You know, he got Jose Abreu at 53. And then if you kind of go up the board a bit, Justin Upton at 68. I know I was a massive Justin Upton fan going into this year, but what he's
still
been doing, I am now, you know, based on what he's been doing the last month, he has been turning me back around. I know he's a streaky player. I know that there's times where you can say that he's your favorite player, and then other times where you want to curse his name, like I have already done openly on this show at least multiple times. But, you know, I think that getting him, you know, even farther, I mean, Hanley Ramirez went before him. I just don't agree with that. You know, he ended up taking him before Jose Bautista, but that's kind of a different issue. But I really like the Lorenzo Cain pick. I kind of shit on him going into the season. He was taken 79th overall by Shoeless Joe, Joseph Pitleski. Of baseballhq.com. Really nice guy. I think he definitely got a nice snag with Lorenzo Cain that late. You know, other
also,
than that,
Robinson Cano two rounds
earlier. That's what I was going to say at 49.
That's a steal as well. Trevor Story going 56th. I'm not really on board with that.
It was an auto draft.
Oh, was it? I didn't know that. So, you know, definitely kind of take that into consideration. But, you know, as we're getting kind of later on in the draft here, I think that's where it's going to get a little bit more interesting. Matt Harvey went 117.
I love that pick.
So
that was one of the Matt Harvey, Mikhail Franco turn for Aaron Bogey, our former co-host on Friends Fantasy Benefits, who we're going to have back on here in the next couple weeks, you know, as a guest. I love that turn of Matt Harvey in the eighth and Mikhail Franco in the ninth. To me, was fantastic.
Yeah, I loved it. And, you know, I had Matt Harvey all set up and ready. And I, you know, obviously wasn't watching the draft, but I got the message that I was on the clock expecting to take Matt Harvey. And there go, lo and behold, Aaron Bogey already took him. So props to him for getting him and kind of capitalizing on that. Other than that, you know, I think that this has gone pretty standard. We did see Michael Brantley go at 119. I'm not willing to bank on that at all.
I actually like that value, and no one has shit on a player more than I have shit on Michael Brantley.
So, I mean, somebody that's so worried about injuries like you, I'm surprised that you're in for that because it's just
we're talking about a guy who's been a top like 50 player.
Yeah, older. Still, I mean, he was supposed to be back in April, Justin. April.
I know April. He got the whole year off to rest and get better.
Yeah, and now he's out for the season.
He would have come back, you know. They just decided to shut him down. If the health reports are good coming in the next year, I think Michael Brantley, if he's going outside the top 100, top 120, I think that's a pretty nice value, personally. I really loved the David Dahl selection by Matt.
God damn it, I was just going to say that.
Well, you're taking all of them, you son of a bitch.
Well, listen. I mean, it's the tides have changed. I am now the star of the show, no longer you, Justin. I'm allowed to have more mic time.
No,
so Mike,
I will throw you out of this call.
I like the David Dahl pick, too, though.
Yeah, I like the David Dahl pick. I was actually hoping he'd make it back around to me. I should have known better with Matt right there. You know, let's see. Matt, you got any other picks that you really like that Matt hasn't already that Mike hasn't already stolen?
Well, I really like Danny Duffy at 116. I think I'm really high on him going in. I think he's going to be a nice pop-up year, ride this nice successful 2016 into next season. Kansas City actually is a good park to pitch in, and I like the strides he's made this year.
Greinke? What are we getting consensus-wise on Greinke?
I love that too.
I think it's good at 97. I probably won't own him in any league this year, but I'm fine with him going there.
He was on my draft board when Bogman popped him. I would have taken Greinke over Cole.
And since we're going to have Aaron on, I'm going to yell at him because I had Wilson Contreras all queued up in a two-catcher format, and he snagged him 94.
Aaron's
I think that's
put together a really interesting team. I hope he comes on while we're still talking about this mock draft. Because he went Jose Altuve, Madison Bumgarner, Jonathan Villar, Yelich, Will Myers, DJ LeMahieu, Wilson Contreras, Matt Harvey, and Mikel Franco. That is his team so far.
It's a nice team.
It's a nice, well-rounded team with some high-risk, high-reward players. But in a 15-team roto league, you need that.
Yeah, yeah. I still like what Ryan's done a lot, too.
I love what Ryan's done up until the end. The Randall Grichuk pick with some of the outfielders still on the board, to me, is a little high.
Yeah, that's nitpicking a bit, I guess. But, you know, I mean, I think that this is a nice, you know, a nice draft just to kind of get some values going into next year. You know, I still can't believe, you know, some of the things I'm seeing. Like Ian Kinsler at 77 is kind of crazy to me, especially based on what he's done. I still can't get over the Todd Frazier pick at 75 that you had. I'm not trying to toot your horn on everything, Justin, but
yeah, I'm absolutely murdering this mock draft. I wish we were playing this out.
so do I.
I'm doing mine a little bit different than I normally would. I mean, I have, you know, I went a little aggressive on Turner, I think, but maybe I didn't. I added
I don't
Cole
think
Ham-
he would have made it back to you for sure.
No, he wouldn't have. I mean, I grabbed Cole Hamels. I'm not.
All right. Well, actually, he probably would have made it back to you unless Justin Klein.
Yeah. I don't know.
Oh, no. You would have had to wait a whole round.
Yeah,
whole,
no chance.
Almost two rounds. Yeah, there's no way he was making it back to you.
Cole Hamels at 103.
That was a little bit of a stretch, considering
I think so too.
Especially how poor he's pitched.
But I'd rather have him over Felix at 107 and Garrett Cole at 106, so I'm fine with that.
Yeah, see, I took Cole, so obviously I'd take him. But I mean, I'd rather have Aaron Sanchez. I'd rather have Duffy. I'd rather have Harvey.
Yeah, yeah, I can't argue with that. It's fun going into a draft with doing absolutely no prep, which
no prep and there's no pressure. You make a mistake, you get auto-drafted, you know, I mean, it's a mock draft in October, you know, September, October. Who the fuck is really going to care? It's just something
like
for me to write
pick.
About in a couple weeks.
You're going to like my next pick, Justin.
well, I hated your last one. Almeides Diaz in the ninth round is absolutely insane. But you're
insane?
A homer, and that's okay.
Why is that insane?
Maybe it's not. I mean, I guess it's okay.
At 133 overall, I'm fine with that.
I'd rather have you know, a couple of the guys in middle infield still on the board. Jonathan Scope,
Yeah, that was my actually the two I was deciding between, Scope and Diaz.
Yeah, well, Scope will still be there on the way around because I'm about to snag Marcus Stroman and Nomar Mazara with my next pick. There you go. So,
well, since you're doing that, I guess I'll tell you who I'm taking. But no, I won't. I'll wait.
Just in case I change my mind.
Yeah.
That is going to wrap us up, though. Mike, why don't you tell people where you can be reaching, what you're working on?
Reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. Continue to check out all of the baseball content. We're going to keep on rolling through. Definitely check out the football podcast, the DFS show with Sasha Salinger, if I can pronounce her name right, and me. We do that on Fridays. Usually that's when it comes out. We also have the preview show for football. Going to be doing one more matchups column for baseballhq.com coming up this Saturday. So if you're a subscriber, definitely check that out. We have a ton of stuff going on at the site in terms of football. Like I said, we're going to keep on rolling with baseball as well, but check out my Fantasy Pros updates as well. And again, life is short, you know, treat every single day like it's your last. Life is precious, you know, and RIP Jose Fernandez, love him to death. And I hope he's in a better place.
All right, Matt, why don't you tell people where you can reach and what you're working on?
MD Top 24 on Twitter. And I want to, you know, condolences to Jose Fernandez and everyone. You know, it's a terrible loss for the game, terrible loss for Earth, planet Earth. You know, it's life will go on, but it's going to be a little bit less brighter. But I don't know. Find me on Twitter, MDTime24. Continue listening to you guys' football podcast. Mike, you've been absolutely killing it. You too, Justin. So very nice
thanks.
Job.
Yeah, I'm doing all right.
Mike won me some money on the DFS podcast week one, so I'll send you a commission check, but
I finally will get paid for something I'm doing. Nice.
Yeah. Hey, there you go. I didn't tell you how much it'd be for. So, but anyways, I don't know. That's it. Baseball season's winding down. It makes me sad because I'm a big, I don't get into football nearly as much. And especially with, you know, yesterday I couldn't really get into it with what happened when, with Fernandez. It's kind of just sitting there watching football kind of numb, but, I'm a big baseball nut. I'll be baseball all year round. I'll be getting into a little bit of basketball, but I'm mostly baseball, so hit me up on there.
We will all be getting into baseball all year round. We will not be going away. This podcast will be back next week. I think the Thursday podcast will take a week off next week, and we'll probably just alternate rest of the way. So until we start back up full blast for the regular season in January. So definitely check us out all off season long. While all the other podcasts are beginning to disappear for the rest of the season, the rest of the year, we will be continuing to give you premier fantasy content rest of the year into next season. So definitely check us out all off season long. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. You can email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. Read everything I'm writing for football on friendsoffantasybenefits.com. You can read everything I'm writing for baseball on FanGraphs. And currently on FanGraphs, I am doing articles on fantasy ethics and kind of off the beaten path topics like that. If you are interested in submitting some of those kind of ethical questions for those articles, you can send it to my personal email, justinmasonfantasy@gmail.com. The third installment of that will be coming out on Wednesday morning. So definitely check that out. It has been somewhat well received. Some people really love it. Some people really hate me for some reason.
Those FanGraphs comment sections are always the greatest.
Oh, they're amazing. And I've, you know, I mean, outside of a lot of the Jose Fernandez stuff that has come out in the last, 24 hours or something, I've had the most commented on articles, I think, in like a month.
No, they're good stuff. I'm going to give you your props. They're always entertaining. So
they're definitely entertaining, and the comments are definitely entertaining. So definitely check those out. Check out the football podcast. Give this podcast a 5-star review. Go check out our sponsor, officialfantasyrings.com, for a customizable ring. Use our promo code FWFB for 20% off at checkout. And that is going to wrap us up for Mike, Matt, and myself. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.